Is he my prince? Is he the toad? Waiting, wondering, is getting too old. I'm gonna let down my hair, slide up my skirt. Get me up, be the biggest little flirt. Welcome to the Shame Free Zone with Veronica Monet, your friendly former sex worker and certified sexologist. The Shame Free Zone is a safe place for your questions and your secrets about all things sexual.
Hey, welcome to Shame Free Zone. This is your host, Veronica Monet. My guest this evening is Carolyn DuPont. She's actually calling in from Toronto, Canada tonight. And I'm over here on her website. And if you want to join me there, it's Caroline, that's C-A-R-O-L-I-N-E, DuPont, D-U-P-O-N-T.com, CarolineDuPont.com. We're going to be talking about health. And I'm really excited to find out about her take on the balance between many things like fitness and movement and nutrition, the human energy field and yoga and meditation. Carolyn is actually a certified yoga instructor, a registered holistic nutritionist. She's got a master's degree in exercise physiology and a black belt in the Nia technique. I actually remember trying a little bit of the Nia technique. I've got one of their DVDs laying around here somewhere. She studied various forms of energy work and has attained personal mastery in Reiki Kumo. And she's practiced or studied mindfulness meditation with Michael Stone. And I think we'll just introduce her to the show now and let her tell us a little bit more about what launched her on such a healthy, holistic lifestyle. Carolyn, welcome to the Shame Free Zone.
Thank you, Veronica.
Glad to have you here. So that is, I think, a question, you know, for a lot of people. Health is something they kind of feel guilty and ashamed of. This is one of the reasons I wanted to talk about this on a show that addresses a lot of shame.
Yeah.
People, I think, will feel like, well, I should, you know, I should exercise more, I should eat better. And it's very difficult for them to get there. And sometimes when somebody hears about somebody like yourself that has accomplished so much and really taken that on as a lifestyle, it might feel a little intimidating. So can you tell us a little bit about your journey?
Yeah, well, I think I have been interested in health as long as I can remember, and I think we're all born with natural affinities and interests, and this is one of the areas that just came quite naturally to me, and I've been at it for 30 years, so this is why I've been able to accumulate so many different, you know, disciplines and whatnot, and I'm really just interested in human health, but also how human spirituality affects human health. Because, and actually this will tie in perhaps to the topic that we're going to be addressing tonight, what I found as I was exploring health and really wanting to help people to alleviate the suffering caused by their health problems, I realized that just telling people what they should be doing, what they should be eating, how much they should be exercising, where they should get their heart rate to, was just not enough. And that's when I started exploring the emotional and the spiritual and the energetic components of health to begin to understand why people do what they do. And over the years, what I've actually discovered is it's actually quite natural for people to make choices, to make positive lifestyle choices if they're clear emotionally. But what happens is most of us make our choices from an emotional place. Basically, a lot of our choices are made to numb our emotions. And this is what often interferes with this natural wanting to care for our bodies.
Well, yeah, and actually on your website now, you said something I think it sounds like something that would kind of heal people's of shame. And he said, to heal on a deep level, we need to recognize that unrest, symptoms, and disease are not wrong or bad in and of themselves. They are potential doorways to a life of beauty, goodness, and truth. Mm-hmm. So, you know, some people actually kind of feel ashamed of being sick, don't they?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so the understanding is that when you take a spiritual perspective to healing, the understanding is you are whole and complete and completely healthy on a spiritual level always, no matter what your body is doing, no matter what you weigh, no matter what you ate today. And so if you use that as the foundation for viewing life, then you begin to, there's a healthier attitude because you're not viewing it from, say, for example, your shame or your fear or whatever other emotions that we get caught up in over the course of our days.
So I'm wondering, the people that you work with, and people do come to you for is it nutritional counseling or health counseling?
Yeah, I generally, when people come to see me, it's a combination of nutrition, spiritual counseling, energy work, meditation, guidance as well. Because it's also interrelated. You know, when people want to change their food habits, again, I used to work primarily as a nutritionist, but I just found that in order to help people to begin to make effortless choices, we needed to heal all of the emotional stuff that was preventing them from doing that. So that's why I take that perspective in the work that I do.
Would you say that most of the people that come to see you are already kind of on a path of health, looking to fine-tune it, or are some people kind of, you know, at the beginning and maybe ill and trying to heal?
Mm-hmm. Well, I get a variety, but I think my website is pretty clear that I'm interested in working with people who are willing to do the emotional work. And so if they're just looking for a menu plan, they probably would go and see another nutritionist. And and when people come to see me, I do make it clear that this is going to be a multidimensional journey between, you know, giving you some sound guidance, but also that the work is going, well, I would be, the whole process will be deeper if they are willing to do the emotional and the spiritual work as well.
Now, I'm looking at some of the classes that you offer, and I see you definitely do have some preparation classes, like Dehydrator Delights, holiday feast cooking, living with food fundamentals, the happy, healthy vegetarian. What is it about the spiritual direction? Can you tell us a little bit about that? I think that's kind of an uncommon approach to health.
Well, I guess it's coming from my desire to really help people on the deepest level possible, and the realization that all health problems as well as poor lifestyle choices are coming from blocked emotion. And when people clear their emotions, I have a sense that they naturally begin to make the choices that are most supportive for not only their body but their soul. So for me, actually doing the spiritual work with my clients is a shortcut to health, and it's a shortcut to helping them to begin to live a life that's authentic, and that, again, where there's this natural ability to make choices that are supportive in all ways, and so that they're not constantly sabotaging themselves with their emotions.
You've talked about innate knowledge, learning how to access your innate knowledge around food and health. Mm-hmm. Do you believe that we have an inner knowing around these things?
I do feel that way, yeah. I mean, if you look around in nature, there's not a single animal that needs to read a book to tell them what to eat. It's just very instinctual. Now, granted, we as human beings are not connected to our instincts at all, and we've been so programmed. So there needs to be a gradual letting go of that programming and a willingness to listen to the body. But that actually the best way to fine-tune your diet is by connecting to that innate knowledge, which comes to you through your intuition and through your body. I mean, you eat a meal and you see how you feel after that meal. Do you feel satisfied? Is it digesting well? Do you feel energized? Because something that works for me as a meal, as a breakfast, as a lunch, as a dinner, may not work for you. I mean, the general principles, I think, for everybody, if they want to heal, are the same. But in terms of refining the diet, that really is a meal-by-meal thing that each person has to develop the self-responsibility for. So it's not just a menu plan. And in a way, what I want to do is teach people how to be self-responsible so that they don't have to rely on me or anyone else to tell them what's best for their health.
In his book, you talk about Darwin suggesting that we're basically frugivores. In other words, humans, like most apes, were meant to eat fruit and some tender shoots. Is that a diet that you think would fit for most humans?
No, not at this point, no. Most of us don't have access to the types of fruit that would be health-sustaining. I mean, I know people who do a primarily fruit-based diet with some vegetables. I do recommend that most people try to adopt a diet that's about 75% vegetables and fruit, because that is a diet that creates the right type of alkalinity in the body, which is most health-supportive. And I do try to encourage people to go as much towards a plant-based diet as possible. But again, it's this thing that you want to work your way towards it consciously. You don't want to just adopt it because I say so. It's sort of a direction that I'm pointing in. And then you work your way towards that in a way that feels joyful. As soon as it starts feeling stressful, then it's no longer healthy, right? As soon as you start, you know, if you push yourself too much, what happens is you do end up sliding back, and then you've got all those emotions around failure and all of that. So I try to encourage people to let joy be their guide. At the same time, I give them pretty strong guidelines in terms of what generally creates great health in most human beings. So as I mentioned, plant-based and lots of raw, as much raw food as you like, organic, local, seasonal, food eaten consciously, paying attention to digestion. All of these things are helpful for all human beings. And then you fine tune it according to your intuition, according to your body, possibly your food sensitivities.
You know, you also talk about releasing guilt and judgment around food choices.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What practices do you teach in order to release guilt and judgment around food? And also, do you have a philosophy about why people tend towards guilt and judgment around food?
Well, because many of us are perfectionists, and also, many of us are struggling with our weight, for example, and we set these goals for ourselves to follow a particular diet. And frankly, a lot of them are just not really feasible. But of course, when we fail, then we judge ourselves, we feel guilty, we feel like failures. So this is why I think it's not the wisest thing to adopt a particularly dietary style, but instead to work your way in a certain direction while you listen to your body and while you use joy and ease as a gauge, and the overall way that you're feeling as a gauge. And then in that way, there is just a gradual progression towards an eating style and a lifestyle that's most supportive for your authentic growth.
You know, co-commitment with that, I think, is another thing that you work with, which is letting go of controlling others' food choices now.
Other people's food choices.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, first of all, what is up with that? Why is it that people want to control what other people eat?
Well, you know, it's the whole mirroring effect, right? Usually what happens is that well, oftentimes in our families, you know, when we see people eating things that we actually would like to be eating ourselves but are kind of on our can't eat list right now. So that might make us feel judgmental, but, you know, mainly because we want to be having that food. Or if we feel guilty about something we've been eating, we might then nag our kids about eating junk. I don't think other people's food choices is our business. I really don't. Even if it's our kids, I mean, it is our business to get healthy foods into the house. But beyond that, I think that we really need to let people make their own choices, because we waste a lot of our own energy in trying to control other people's food choices. And the truth is, if we would release that, we would see that they're just really reflecting our own conflicts around food.
Reflecting our own conflicts around food. So maybe we start off by feeling kind of judgmental and guilty about ourselves.
Yeah.
And then the way we cope with that is to try to control others.
Yeah, we just reflect it. Rather than looking at ourselves, we just project it outwards. It just often seems easier to do that.
It's a really good point. Now, I wonder, where do you draw this this information? One of the things I've noticed when people are talking about health is that they do sometimes seem to get really focused on how you should eat and a particular way that you should eat.
Mm-hmm.
So that you start to think, oh, my God, you have to choose, am I a vegetarian or am I vegan or am I a raw foodist? And it seems like there's like a lot of controversy and competition between these different ideologies.
Absolutely.
Did you go through any of that yourself, or?
I have at certain points in my life. My decision to become a vegan 25 years ago was no question there. I didn't feel confused at all because it was a heart-centered decision. It wasn't my mind that was guiding me there. It was just so clear that this is how I was going to eat for the rest of my life. And heart-centered, I mean, the reason I became a vegan was for compassionate reasons as well as environmental reasons in addition to health reasons. So that one was very easy. But as I worked my way into the whole foods world, yeah, it gets confusing. You know, I did try the 100% raw thing for a while and just realized that it wasn't the best for me. I have tried different approaches, macrobiotics, Ayurveda, natural hygiene. I did the fruitarian thing for a while. And I think these are all kind of natural parts of the process. And then at some point, actually after I wrote my first book, I remember just lying in bed one day and saying to myself, okay, Carolyn, no more rules. Just listen to your body, eat what you want, enjoy the food, and let's see what happens. Let's see what happens. And we just take away all these rigid rules of do's and don'ts. And the interesting thing is that I started enjoying food much better. My choices naturally became better. I did less binging. So it's when you actually take off out of all the rules and you begin to trust your body that there's this ability to naturally make better choices. And the other thing, and you asked me this question earlier, and I don't think I answered it, but the other thing is when you do have emotions come up around food, whether that be confusion or guilt or judgment, I would say look at those. Like, don't ignore them. Don't suppress them. Don't feel bad about them either. But, you know, in the Buddhist philosophy, it's about bringing awareness to these emotions so that you can understand them. And the awareness and the understanding will slowly but surely dissolve these emotional knots that we have in our system. And when those emotional knots begin to release themselves, then we have greater access to true clarity, because we're not being influenced by these emotional veils that really prevent us from making clear choices.
Yes, it does seem to me like there's a lot of guilt. Now, do you think parents establish some of this with their children?
Oh, absolutely. Most of the patterns we get into are laid very on in childhood. And, of course, it's not to blame the parents, because they also had parents who did similar things. So I think that we as parents can, even we're all, most of us I'm sure are very well-meaning, but we just perpetuate the same beliefs and struggles that we have around food on our children. So for example, one of them that I was able to sidestep, thank goodness, but my daughter used to not want to eat in the morning when she was small. And part of me wanted to say, well, you have to eat in the morning. It's the most important meal of the day. But something in me told me that if I did that, basically I was saying to her, don't listen to your body, listen to me, right?
Right.
Right. So what I did is I just packed her all kinds of snacks. I would try to make her some kind of breakfast thing that I knew she really liked, or I'd cut up some fruit, which she loved in the morning. But other than that, I would just pack her a lot of extra snacks for school and really did my best to encourage both of my kids to just listen to their bodies and not impose the same guidelines I had for myself at the time or the same rules. So, for example, when I went 100% raw, I didn't impose that on my kids. I really tried to just encourage them to listen to their own bodies. And that being said, you know, when I made a meal, if one of them said, well, I don't want to eat that, I would generally encourage them to at least try it, you know. So there's, you don't want to completely let them run wild, I suppose, but...
well, they might just eat ice cream or pizza all the time, huh?
What's that?
I said they might just eat ice cream or pizza all the time.
You got it. If I were to ask my kids every night what they wanted, they probably would ask for pizza. You're absolutely right. So what I would do with them actually is over the course of the week, I'd make various things, you know, the brown rice and the stir fries and the chilies, which they always did like once they had it. And then on Fridays, that would be our pizza day. And I would buy, you know, organic spelt crust and make tomato sauce, and they'd cut their own veggies and decorate their pizzas themselves and all of that. And so they got their pizza, but I sort of did it in a way that they were involved and they knew that I was making conscious choices, because that's the way that I love them, is by bringing food in the house. That's going to be really supportive for their physical health and every other aspect of their health.
So are you feeling like you get a high degree of cooperation?
Oh, yeah, they were great.
Yeah,
yeah, for sure. They understood, I think, because I didn't make it it didn't become a power struggle at all. They understood what we were doing and why, and they were quite proud of their diet, actually, for the most part, and liked having their friends over and educating their friends about food and its effect on their physical abilities and, you know, their athletic abilities and all of that. So actually, they're both working their way into the health field as well right now. So
they're a
natural. Yeah.
Fabulous. They must be in college now.
They're both done. They're both done. Jeremy
both done with college.
Is in the field, and Jackie is... just finished last year. Yeah.
Wow. Well, congratulations on raising healthy children.
That's not
an easy thing to do when obesity and type 2 diabetes seem to be overtaking a lot of our youth.
Yeah.
Turning our attention a little bit to your book now, once again, the title of that book is The New Enlightened Eating, and it's Simple Recipes for Extraordinary Living. And that just came out, right?
Yeah, it came out in April, I believe, or May. Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, you talk about enjoy a plant-based diet and a wide variety of whole foods, use organic and biodynamic foods and fresh local foods in season, include more raw vegetables, fruits, and sprouts to maintain the body's alkalinity, understand your food sensitivities to boost immunity and reduce inflammation, and boost your diet with fresh juices, probiotics, superfood powders, and avoid foods that rob nutrition. That's an interesting concept to me that I just recently started finding out about, which there are actually some foods we might think are healthy that rob our nutrition. Could you say more about that?
Which the category that you're speaking about, the foods that rob your nutrition?
Uh-huh.
Is that what it's... Okay,
well, that's what it says right here. It says, Avoid foods
back of the book, right? Okay. So yeah, what I'm talking about there is refined foods. So when you eat white sugar or white rice, what happens is that you may be getting calories, but because the food has been, some of the nutrients have been removed from the food during the processing, it actually pulls nutrients out of your body in order for you to process that very food. So it's really important to avoid refined foods as much as we possibly can, again, without depriving ourselves. But, you know, if we can focus for the most part on foods that are grown, that are eaten as close to their natural state, the benefits will be tremendous.
So that's more like a raw food diet?
Not necessarily. It could be cooked. I do recommend that people try to have as much raw food as possible. And as a rule of thumb, I say, hey, why don't you have a green smoothie every day, a big green salad every day, and then, you know, one of your meals can be more of a sort of a brown rice and vet curry or a stir fry on quinoa or something like that. So more of a cooked meal for one of your, at least one of your meals. And then the other two can be sort of the smoothie-based one or the big what I call a hearty salad meal. So that's a salad that contains really satisfying things like nuts and avocados and sprouts and root vegetables and maybe some olives, maybe some leftover chickpeas from last night or quinoa or something like that, so that you're getting primarily raw greens, but that it feels satisfying.
You know, I know you also help people transition to a healthier household. Isn't that like one of the major problems? Oh, somebody in the household wants to eat this, and somebody else wants to eat that. And then when you have foods around that you're trying to avoid, mm-hmm. it can be pretty challenging. So what tips do you have for our listeners?
Well, that's a challenging thing, and my clients often will state that the people in their family are eating, everybody's eating differently. Usually the client is the one who really wants to push things forward, but the family might be resisting some of it or still want some of their old foods around. So right. I guess the main thing you got to do is live and let live and respect other people's food choices. It does make it hard when the food is in the house for sure, and it requires a little bit more resolve to not sort of you know, go back to eating those foods that you've decided that you would like to avoid. But I think what I always say to people is just really embrace your own journey and have fun with it and enjoy making wonderful foods and share that with your family. And then over the years, hopefully some weeks, you'll find that slowly but surely they are shifting their food habits as well. The other thing you can do is, like, if your family likes chips, then maybe switch to a baked potato chip or something, or a baked corn chip, or switch to healthier versions of their favorite foods, and that may be acceptable to them, too, and tell them why you're doing what you're doing without lecturing. And I think with the right type of attitude, I think it is possible to shift the people in your family, but to not be attached to that. Really, it's about, like, I had one client who, you know, she was thinking of taking my Food for Life course, which is an 8-week course in the kitchen, and she says, yeah, but you know what? And she was diabetic, and she had lots of health problems on all kinds of drugs, and she said, but I don't think my husband's going to do that. And I said to her, look, it's your health. This is one of this codependency is one of the things that keeps us in the disease state. And part of your healing will actually be to separate yourself from your husband and his food choices and to make these choices for yourself. And let him do. Don't make it a point of contention. Let him do what he does and just take care of yourself. And she did, and she's off of most of her medications. You know, her blood sugar levels have really normalized, and she's done amazing. So,
getting the blood sugar to normalize can be a challenge for some people. You actually talk about what are
you know, some of the how some foods can leave you feeling nourished and energized while others do not, and also how to heal yourself through food.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, then you're saying to trust your intuition. It seems like for somebody who's out of touch with their body and their body maybe is sick, that that's going to be a little bit difficult to get in touch with that intuition. Do people kind of have to start with a cleansing program? Or?
Well, it is true that it's hard for people to get in touch with their intuition, and that's why the whole first chapter is really solid guidelines around, you know, the direction that you want to be going in, as well as suggestions for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. So there's these solid guidelines, but at the same time, there's an encouragement to start listening to your body and to trust that you actually are the best expert on your body. So that's foundational. In terms of a cleanse, just improving your diet is going to be the beginning of your detoxification process. I don't generally suggest that someone do a drastic cleanse at the very beginning unless they have severe health problems. And the reason for that is that we really want to develop a lifestyle around healthy eating. And say, for example, someone is eating kind of the standard North American diet, and then they do a juice fast, which is going to be a fabulous cleanse for them. But, you know, they can't do that forever. So a week or two after they finish their juice fast, what are they going to eat? They haven't learned how to make a decent salad. They haven't learned how to make whole foods. So you really need to get the kind of your regular daily schedule, where you're shopping and recipes that you like, under your belt first. And then and then you can do a cleanse so that you have something to go back to, because one of the worst things you can do is cleanse and then go back to eating McDonald's or any other type of, processed foods.
Now, why is that the worst thing?
Well, it's really hard on your system, right? Because oftentimes in a cleanse, you kick out all these toxins and you make your body's cleaner, and in a way it becomes more vulnerable to the toxins.
Uh-huh.
So a lot of times what happens, for example, along our intestines is we build this coating of mucus and plaque, and it's actually partially to protect us from the garbage that we're eating. So if you do a cleanse and you slough all of that off and then you throw garbage, you don't have the layer of protection.
Wow.
And so it's shocking for your system to go back and forth like that.
I never heard it put that way. So that's really interesting. So it seems like even cleansing, which is that another word for fasting, or are they two different
There's
things?
There's different ways of cleansing. I mean, even just changing your diet is a cleanse in and of itself. Even just improving your diet, increasing your fruit and vegetables to 75% for many people may be a cleanse. Generally, a cleanse is where you might take some kind of product or herb to help your liver, your kidneys to detoxify.
Right.
What I generally do with my clients is a juice fast. I do two of them, two guided juice fasts with my community here twice a year. We go for a week. And during that juice fast, we will include various other ways of encouraging the body to kick out toxins that it might have built up over the years. That could include enemas and skin brushing and neti pots, which is for the sinuses. We might do herbal teas for the kidneys and liver, et cetera.
Wow.
Yeah. It's lovely.
Well, you know, part of your journey, I think you write about this in your book, and I'd like to read a little excerpt from it because I found it just really inspiring, and I think our listeners would too. The dietary changes initiated shifts in virtually every area of my life. My interest in human health through lifestyle continued as I was drawn to holistic movement forms like the Nia technique, yoga, and therapeutic dance, which I continue to explore and teach today. Mental and emotional pieces to the health puzzle became clearer as my view of health broadened to include my whole being. This led to energy work, psycho-spiritual therapy, Buddhist-based mindfulness training, and an ever-deepening exploration of true nature through meditation practice. I've rediscovered the freedom and joy of dancing, singing, playing with a guitar, pottery, drumming, gardening, growing some of our food, sustainable living, and spending time in nature. I am becoming more comfortable living in the magic of the unknown and look forward to a life of awakening, synchronicities, laughter, service, and love. This sounds like an incredibly gorgeous expression of health on a multitude of levels.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that that's what initially comes to people's minds when they're thinking about cleaning up their diet. I think they usually think about losing weight,
yeah,
fitting into an old pair of pants, going back to this high school reunion and impressing everybody, or fitting into a wedding dress, all kinds,
yeah,
of things that, you know, people have kind of this goal-oriented thing. But as far as actually having a richer life where you're more engaged, I'm not sure that that translates for people. So,
yeah, it's amazing how it does, because everything is connected, right? And when you change your dietary choices, I mean, we've all heard you are what you eat, but we don't really get the profound truth of that. And I've experienced it, because as I embarked on my journey, the food choices were really the first shift that I make. I mean, different people do different things, but for me, it was the food that really pulled me into this holistic lifestyle. And food is energy, and food has an imprint, and it has emotion in it. And so when we take it into our system, it affects us. It affects our beliefs. It affects our emotional system. If food is really vital and alive, it brings us to life. And on the other hand, on the opposite side of the coin, if we continue to eat fake foods, we stay fake. We stay inauthentic. So there's this really interesting metaphor that happens when we start eating real foods and whole foods. We become whole. We become real. We come to life if we eat living foods. And you've got to experience it to really feel the profound effects. But it doesn't take a long time, and it's pretty striking.
Wow. So, what is it that catapulted you onto this pathway? Were you sick or overweight? Or
no, I wasn't. I was, at the time, I was 28 or so, and I was pretty fit. And I've been quite slim my whole life. But I think what prompted it mainly, Veronica, was the birth of my son. My first child was born when I was 28, and there was just something in him that made me more curious about myself, I guess, and about finding out who he was. And again, there's that mirror thing again, finding out who I was. And I realized that I had been the victim of a lot of brainwashing, as we all are, and I had a lot of beliefs that I was just all of a sudden willing to question around, well, how I was going to raise my kids, what I was going to eat, where I was going to live, what I was going to do, who I was. You know, all of that stuff gets kind of programmed into us, but I just, for some reason, became curious about what was most authentic for me. And that was when he was 7 months is when I read the first book that really kind of got me going on the vegan path. And
which book was that?
A Diet for a New America by John Robbins. It's a beautiful, beautiful book. Just beautifully written and extensively researched. Another great one that I've just gotten my hands on recently is The World Peace Diet by Will Tuttle. Now, that one was written more recently, and it's similar to John's, but extremely extensive in terms of the research that he's done around the effects of plant-based versus meat-centered diets on everything.
You do talk about that. What is the effect that your diet choices, your food choices, have on the planet and other animals? Did you want to say something about that? And does that tie into Buddhism at all?
Generally, you'll often find that Buddhism will recommend a vegetarian diet if you can do it. So it's not foreign. You'll find that in yoga philosophy as well. They generally do recommend that you go towards a vegetarian diet because it's more compassionate. I mean, my goodness, today I was traveling down the highway here, and there were three huge trucks full of little pigs in there. And they were, I don't know where they were off to. They seemed quite tiny, so I don't think they were off to the slaughterhouse, maybe a feedlot or something, I don't know. But it just breaks my heart. It's just not okay to treat other beings that way. I think if we're going to be eating animal products, we need to choose consciously so that we're sure that we're not supporting the suffering of other beings. Because we're all connected. Everything is connected. And, I mean, there's the direct effect. When we eat the flesh of an animal that suffered, we are literally taking that energy and that emotion into our system. So there's that direct effect. But there's also just the numbing of our natural compassion for life that happens when we continue to eat animal products that have been raised with some element of human or animal suffering. And for me, I just didn't want to be a part of it. And the cool thing is that not only can you be healthy on a plant-based diet, you can be healthier. You can heal diseases on a plant-based diet. My kids have never had drugs or antibiotics. They're both elite athletes, and they've been raised on a plant-based diet. So it's any way you look at a plant-based diet, it's amazing. It's fabulous, you know, environmentally, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, physically, you know, you just really no sound arguments against a plant-based diet.
It's actually better for the global warming as well, isn't it?
Absolutely.
I mean, doesn't it take a tremendous amount of energy to raise a cow up to slaughtered for steak?
Yep, plus the methane they produce, plus not to mention all the rainforests that are being cut down in order to create grazing land for these animals as well. The amount of land that it takes to grow all the feed for the animals as well. It takes 15 pounds of grain to make 1 pound of beef. So it's very wasteful environmentally. And then, of course, you got to think about all the manure that these animals produce, which is one of the number one sources of water pollution.
Yes, and I think it might have been connected to the that E. coli outbreak that they had around spinach because they were near a factory farm.
You got it. Yeah. We had that up here in Ontario as well, where the wells were full of I think it was E. coli as well, but it was really runoff from pig farms that was causing it. Yeah.
Wow. So it's so sad. I share your grief around that. By the way, I was traveling down the freeway one day and saw hens being, and it was obvious that some of them had died on the journey.
Oh dear.
Yeah, it was grisly.
Yeah.
And this is, of course, happening all day long around the world, and every once in a while we just get to see a little glimpse of it because they happen to be in a truck being transported or something like that.
Right. Yeah.
What you also talk about emotional eating, and since we're talking about some very emotional stuff here, what do people do about that, and how prevalent is it?
Emotional eating. Oh, well, most people's food choices are emotionally based. We don't eat things because we are feeling that it's going to make us well or make us feel healthy. Many of our choices, it's probably one of the most acceptable things that we do to numb our emotions, right? Because you have to do it, and so many people are doing it. Food can be used to pacify our emotions, and I think the vast majority of people are doing that, maybe without even being aware. Maybe it's subconscious. And so, in order to...
Well, there's some overt ways to do it, right? Like eat a half a quart of ice cream, and, you know, because your boyfriend broke up with you. That's more overt. And
overt,
of course, it winds up being joked about in a lot of sitcoms. Mm-hmm. But are there more subtle forms where, you know, sometimes somebody might choose a particular food because it reminds them of a good time or a time when they felt loved by their parents, you know, like maybe hot dogs or something?
Absolutely, there's that. There's, of course, probably cookies and pie and cakes and pastries have the same effect. But I think generally salty, rich, and sweet foods tend to somehow be more emotionally satisfying than, say, an apple or banana or a salad, you know.
Right.
So, yeah, so the solution to that is just bringing awareness to the fact that you are eating emotionally. And I know for myself, when I started trying harder to get a handle on this in my own life, it was just really kind of slowing down while I was eating and noticing what I was feeling. There's an example that I give in the book where, for whatever reason, I got into this habit of eating toast with butter and honey every night, usually after I got my kids in bed. And I knew it was kind of a habit energy because I'd start thinking about it like 3 hours before, and I'd like, oh my God, I can't wait to get the kids in bed so I can have this toast and butter and honey. And,
yes.
You know, right? So, and then I just thought, okay, well, what's actually going on here? And I kind of checked my body, and I just felt where this feeling of hunger, because it wasn't physical hunger, but it was an emotional hunger. There was this emptiness inside of me. And so I checked that out, and I realized that it was loneliness. And I just mm-hmm. committed to then bringing that feeling of loneliness into my meditation practice so that I could deal with it in healthier ways. And sure enough, the habit just kind of disappeared. Once I started looking at the emotion itself and facing that, then it wasn't as scary, and it wasn't something that I needed to suppress anymore. Well, and then it just worked its way out, and I found other ways to deal with my loneliness, and also realized that loneliness is a state of mind. It's not actually your true state, right? So this is all awarenesses that came to me as I meditated on it.
How does yoga fit into this picture of health?
Well, yoga is an art and a science that was originally created to help people to become enlightened, which means to know yourself, to know your true self. And so, yoga is very much about moving emotional energy and connecting to spirit and quieting the mind, and the physical postures actually help to dislodge any blocked emotional patterns and energetic patterns in the body. And that's actually what it was originally designed for. It had nothing to do with muscular strength or flexibility. It was all about moving energy. And this energy that I'm talking about is, you know, blocked energy is generally emotional at its root. And so that's really was the purpose of yoga.
It also has an effect on the internal organs, right? Because you're kind of getting them in different positions. Mm-hmm. That can be healing.
Absolutely. And the internal organs store emotions as well. So
right.
When you do a twist or whatever and you take a deep breath in that twist, not only are you squeezing out lymphatic fluids and bringing fresh blood to your organs, but you also can help to move any type of stagnant emotional energy. So in Eastern medicine, the liver, for example, is considered to be the organ of anger, and the kidneys are the organ of fear. And there's all kinds of different places in our body where we store typical emotions. But in the yoga postures, it's meant to actually begin to stir up and help to move and lift these emotions so that they're not having an effect on our physical being, and they're not blocking us from connection to our true self.
Wow. So when your clients come to you, you put them on kind of a regimen of yoga and Nia technique and moving in the direction of plant-based diet, or
they know what I offer, and usually what happens is people will come to me for any one of the things that I offer. So they may come for spiritual guidance, they may come for nutrition, they may come for meditation. Everybody is sort of, I guess they enter in at a point that feels more comfortable. But what I find often is, say, for example, I get somebody who takes some food classes with me, and then as they get to know me and maybe trust me and learn more about their bodies, then they might then say, oh, I want to take your meditation class, or I want to come to your deep healing retreat. So they enter in at a point that feels comfortable for them, and usually they'll progress to some of the other things that I have to offer so that they get the big picture of health. And that's my goal. And then, you know, hopefully after 2 or 3 years, I don't see them anymore because they've become self-responsible. They have the idea of it, and they're living a beautiful life, and that's great. That's my purpose. I don't want to see people for the rest of their lives, you know. I don't want to be their
therapist.
I want to set them free, you know, or help them to be set free.
And free from shame and guilt around their money choices,
mm-hmm.
for one,
yep.
right? And also free from disease.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Free from just any type of burdens or stresses, free from false beliefs about themselves or others or the world, everything, yeah.
Well, believe it or not, this hour just flew by.
Oh, really?
So, and I want to make sure the listeners know how to contact you for your counseling and your retreats, and also how to get a copy of your book. So if you want to tell them a little bit about your contact information, feel free to do that.
Thank you,
now.
Veronica. Yeah, so they can contact me through my website, carolindupont.com, which you spelled that at the beginning of the program, but it's C-A-R-O-L-I-N-E, DuPont, D-U-P-O-N-T. And then everything is there. I do, of course, you're in California and I'm in Toronto, but I do Skype consultations, and that could be a way to connect. And also the book is available at bookstores and online as well in the States, so they can certainly order it that way.
Well, I certainly wish you all the success with your new book, and especially I just really want to applaud your holistic approach to the whole thing and really trying to help people to connect with their own intuition and hopefully, you know, what's best for them, because I do think that our bodies are all a little bit different, although, like you said, the basics do seem to apply.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks, Carolyn.
Thank you, Veronica.
I really appreciate your being on our show. Once again, this was Carolyn DuPont, and you can visit her website at carolindupont.com and check out, get your copy of The New Enlightened Eating. It's a cookbook, and it looks really fascinating. And then next week, I will be interviewing Katrina Radke, actually. She's going to be talking to us as a former Olympic swimmer. And we're going to be learning about how you can be your best without the stress. So we'll see you next Monday in the Shame Free Zone. Good night for now.
Thank you for tuning in tonight. If you liked what you heard and you want more solutions for your love life, please call me toll-free at 888-903-0050. Once again, that number is 888-903-0050. I am the only person who answers that line, and I am usually available Monday through Friday from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. Pacific Time. You can also visit sexwithoutshame.com to discover more of what I can do for you. And remember, your secret is safe with you. Sering kesepian, kenapa tak mutus kabar berita?